morning, Cascadia. You are listening to your community radio station, KBOO Portland, Oregon, at 90.7 FM. Today is Monday, July 20th, 2009, and this is Air Cascadia, long on content, short on time. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Liam Delta.
Oregon is considering commercial hemp production, and Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal, is with us to talk about it.
Forest defenders and defendants are still taking a stand. We bring you a report from Elliott Free State.
And down the coast, Coos Bay, the LNG terminal developer, wants more time before finalizing the deal like a shy bride.
Portland area weather today, sunny and hot, high around 90. Tonight, clear, low around 60. And the same for the next few days.
And first, we go to regional news from around Cascadia. With double-digit unemployment and the hills denuded of trees, the seas depleted of fish, Oregon, an agricultural state, in essence, is up against the wall and has finally come around to the common-sense idea that commercial hemp is the way to go. My guest this morning, joining us by phone from D.C., is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal. Good day, Alan, and thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us.
Good day.
Thank you so much. Talk a little bit about the pros of growing commercial hemp, what it means for Oregon. That would make us the tenth state that is considering this?
That is correct. Hemp, otherwise known as the non-psychoactive strain of the plant marijuana or cannabis, is grown all throughout the world, even in Canada, Europe, all of Asia. So even under United Nations anti-marijuana treaties, clearly, countries can grow industrial hemp. Industrial hemp might be more utilitarian than the soybean. There are thousands and thousands of industrial applications for hemp. Anything that can be made of paper or pulp can be made from this plant that has been vilified most of our lives.
So, in other words, trees would not be continually cut to provide, the pulp for paper. What about fuel sources?
Indeed, biofuels are a major aspect of hemp, fodder for animals. I've been to places in France, a company called Isochanvé, which literally means houses of hemp. In this part of France, they make the entire home out of this highly vilified plant here in the United States.
So we really have demonized a source that we could be using to, certainly here in Oregon, alleviate some of the financial stress that rural counties are facing with the end of timber payments. Talk a little bit about what this means for the legalization of marijuana. Is this part of liberalizing our current draconian laws?
In some regards, it is. Certainly, Normal has been talking about the wonders of hemp for the better part of 35 years. However, I would tell you here in Washington, D.C., the movement is balkanized. You've got hemp lobbyists, you've got legalizing advocates like Normal, and you even have groups that only advocate for the medical access to marijuana. So from Normal's point of view, we'd like to put them all into one tent and make the logical argument for reform, but broken down practically, the hemp lobby in the United States lobbies specifically for hemp and largely against cannabis.
Well, this is more or less the case out in Oregon too. So we will see where this goes. And Oregon has a sort of reputation for seeing the light before some other states. So we do hold out hope. You want to give any information? You want to give your website?
Sure, people can find out all they want to know about Normal and hemp at www.normal.org or call us toll-free in Washington at 888-67-NORMAL, N-O-R-M-L.
Thank you so much for that. My guest has been Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal. Thank you so much.
Best to you.
The looming ban on grass seed field burning is about two issues. One is the heft wielded by the asthmatic McMansion owners who moved to the country for the view and because, by God, they had the money to move wherever they like. And they don't like smoke wafting into their lily-white lungs. Number two is that field burning is an affordable, pesticide, herbicide-free means of cleaning the soil for the next year's crop. The way Monsanto and Archer Daniels Midland see it, there's no profit in that. The harvest season in the Willamette Valley It is harvest season in the Willamette Valley, but after this year's legislative session, the future of Oregon's grass seed industry is hazy.
It's a dead giveaway to the huge companies that make agricultural chemicals. That's what it is. If you can't burn the field, you'll have to use something else.
Yeah.
Does it not warm the cockles of your left ventricle to know that golf in Oregon is going green? Oh, yes. Golf is getting greener across the United States, but especially in the Pacific Northwest and particularly in the Portland area. Golf courses are adopting environmentally sustainable practices. They're using far less water, fertilizer, and weed killer than before and employing grass varieties that can thrive without meticulous care. And as Bush said, now watch this drive.
After decades of jokes about rain, at last Oregon has awakened to the deadly prospect of the well finally running dry. It's called carrying capacity, and it means there are more people than the environment can handle. So the state is going to start charging a fee and requiring a map for new wells. Oregonians still don't need a permit to dig a well for typical household use, but a new state law requires property owners to pay a $300 fee and file a map showing the well's location. The law went into effect July 1st. So do we see any sign of laws limiting growth?
The Oregon Health and Science University is feeling the heat in a political environment that is less and less tolerant of abuses perpetrated by medical behemoths. Now, the idea is to come up with a stable business plan that assures that OHSU can reinvest in patient care, research, and education without experiencing the physical and financial pain so many of its patients undergo. As a hybrid public-private institution, OHSU is immune to the lawsuits that plague other houses of healing. And as a teaching hospital, it has no constraints when it comes to using you as Exhibit A. But rest assured, the place is awash in money, and much of the crying poor that we hear coming off of the hill is just that.
This from Portland Indie Media, because you know the Main Street media won't touch it. Congratulations to Individuals for Justice in Portland, Oregon, for standing up to AIPAC and the Portland police and winning in court. Navy veteran Joe Walsh from Portland, Oregon, also known as the Lone Vet, had his day in court and was found not guilty in a stunning peace movement victory over a foreign political influence. Joe was supported by a dozen or more activist friends and colleagues in Judge Larson's court yesterday and represented by Jason and Gregory Kafori. One of the police officers in the room was Kyle Nice, the Portland police officer who was acquitted along with a couple other cops of wrongdoing in the beating death of James Chassie. You can read the whole story on Indie Media.
Well, Cascadia Summer 2009 is in full gear right now, and Elliott Free State lives on, although some of it is less free than it might like. Forest activism is like soil, many layers, many roles for all of us to play. My guest this morning is Jasmine Zimmer-Stuckey with ForestDefense.org. Good morning, Jasmine.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being with us. Can you give listeners an update on Elliott Free State and what's going on with the defendants, the people who were arrested at that blockade?
Oh, sure. So we'll start out last Friday was the arraignment of the 27 arrestees, and they all pled not guilty. And so our lawyers with the Civil Liberties Defense Center, many thanks to them, are going to start into negotiations, and we'll find out trial dates and whatnot by the end of this week. So everyone, those 27 people, are still waiting to see what's going to happen. Until then, we're using this opportunity to start an above-ground campaign to protect the Elliott. There's a couple of things going on this week that we'd love to invite people to. There's an auction this Wednesday, the 22nd, at 2 p.m. at the Oregon Department of Forestry Coos Bay office, and that's an auction for two sales in the Elliott State Forest. Again, native forest. Beautiful forest land. So if folks are interested in coming down on Wednesday, we'd love to have them. We're putting together a couple of workshops, media workshops, State of Oregon's forest discussions. All this stuff can be found on our website, www.forestdefensenow.org. And we're getting ready to launch a buy it back, stop the liquidation of the Elliott State Forest campaign. Trying this time we're going to work on networking with the local folks who are working on a presentation to put together, start giving in these communities to increase recreation in the Elliott. Currently there's none. And to start the discussion about creating carbon reserves and biodiversity reserves in this amazing critical habitat.
Thanks so much for that, Jasmine. Jasmine Zemestuki is with forestdefense.org. Thank you very much for that. And we'll definitely want to keep listeners posted of the action in Coos Bay on Wednesday. Thanks, Jasmine.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Hungry? How about a nice horse burger? Horse slaughter is back, and it could be starting here in Oregon. Fans of Equicide are pushing Congress to introduce a bill to allow the U.S. Department of Agriculture to resume inspecting horse meat for human consumption. The Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs also are considering building a slaughter and processing facility, possibly for pet food, on the reservation north of Madras. The project was recommended last spring by a coalition of Northwest tribes. Until 2 years ago, as many as 100,000 horses were killed annually in the U.S. for meat for foreign markets.
Ron Wyden signs on to a letter urging lawmakers to slow down on health care. Obama steps up the pace and Republican hardliners rush to derail the whole train. Independent journalist David Rosenfeld with LundReport.org is with me today to look a little deeper down the rabbit hole. Good morning, David. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Chris. Thanks a lot for having me.
So this is kind of disturbing, this letter that Ron Wyden's gotten himself involved with. What does that mean?
Well, you know, he signed on to this letter along with five other basically conservative Democrats, including independent Joe Lieberman, Senator Ben Nelson from Florida, and Senator Olympia Snowe. Both of the last two have come out recently saying that they're completely opposed to a public health plan option. You know, Wyden said on his Facebook page when he did this that he was committed to reform and wanted to delay this for not months or years, and he was committed to getting something passed this year. But he's, you know, it's very surprising, I think, for a lot of Oregonians that he's aligning himself with the number of conservative Democrats. So this is the same Ron Wyden who voted against the Iraq War and who refused to vote for a funding bill without a time frame for withdrawal. So I think it's really shocking for a lot of people.
So he's more or less, as you said, aligned himself with what's been described as the blue dog Democrats. Is that correct?
Yeah, somewhat, yeah.
That is disturbing, especially since he's more or less based his entire public image on his support for health care. But nationally, what's going on? I know that President Obama is very keen to get this done by August 8th before they break. And, of course, at this moment, Republicans are piling on to try to hijack the whole process.
Right. We saw a lot of things happening last week. I think Republicans really cranked up the fear campaign and talking about how, you know, we're going to get so many things denied and this is an end to freedom, I think. Steele, the Republican chairman, said last week. What else happened? The Congressional Budget Office said that the plans aren't doing anything to control costs, which in large respects probably is pretty true. And I just felt like the media sort of turned on a dime in about one day to say that this plan was dying, that, you know, this was a failing bill, that Obama had to now resurrect this plan. It's just incredible to me how fast the media machine can turn on something where it seemed like just earlier last week there was a lot of hope and promise when the House and the Senate both passed bills out of committee. So, I mean, this is like a seesaw battle. I still think that that we're going to get a lot of meaningful reform. But, you know, we're not – I don't see that they are completely standing up to the industry and willing to cut their profits and do something to control these costs.
Well, the timing is what's so interesting to watch. Thank you so much for that. My guest has been independent journalist David Rosenfeld with thelundreport.org. Thanks so much, David.
Thanks a lot.
This has been Headlines and Commentary from Air Cascadia for Monday, July 20th, 2009. Today's editor is Chris Andre. Engineering is Tammy Dean. The interim AM News and Public Affairs Director is Trillian Shannon, in for Kathleen Stevenson on sabbatical. I'm Liam Delta.
And I'm Chris Andre. You're listening to member-supported KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM. Your support and your support only keeps us subverting the dominant paradigm. Thank you so much, members.
I'm next, Helen Caldicott, If You Love This Planet.
Thanks for listening and have a good day.